The story of this economy as told by a couple of three indicators. Also, donuts from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Wednesday today, the 25th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Mitchell Hartman gets a break from the Marketplace desk of economic peril today. His recent assignments covering indicators that show something evil this way comes. His respite on this Wednesday comes to us from the Commerce Department, which told us this morning that orders for durable goods, stuff that is designed to last, cars and trucks and machine tools, fridges and air conditioners, you get the picture, I hope. Those orders have been up 13 of the past 15 months. We learned today that July durables orders were down. But as Mitchell reminds us, you gotta read the fine print.
This is a case where you can ignore the headline number. Orders for long-lasting stuff made in factories were down 0.1% in July, but
we actually thought that it was a strong report.
Jay Hatfield is portfolio manager at Infrastructure Capital Advisors.
Durable goods, you have to be a little bit cautious interpreting because you really need to look at it ex-transportation.
That means not including orders for new transportation equipment, a lot of which is aircraft, which have a huge price tag and can mess up the numbers. They were down almost 50% in July. But core durable goods orders were up 0.7%, about the same as the month before. Consumers are one thing driving this continued strength, says Andrew Hunter at Capital Economics. We've had money in the bank from relief checks, and until recently we couldn't spend much of it on services, like going out to eat. So we've spent it on stuff.
That's fed through to strong demand for U.S. manufacturers.
That in turn drives manufacturers to invest in new assembly lines and trucks and robots to pump up production. The Fed's rock-bottom interest rates help, says Hunter.
Borrowing costs for most firms are pretty much at or close to record lows.
But now, remember, I said you could pretty much ignore the huge fall in airplane orders in July? Well, maybe not. Colin Scarola, who follows the industry at CFRA, says recently airlines started warning that people were pulling back on travel plans due to
uncertainty around the Delta COVID variant. When airlines get nervous about their growth plans, they pump the brakes on ordering new planes.
If airplane orders stay depressed, that could signal the recovery in air travel and aircraft production is faltering. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
It's been a while since we talked about the Baltic Dry Index on the program, but the 11-year high it hit this week brought it back to our attention. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher explains what's going on.
The Baltic Dry Index. Until I got today's reporting assignment, I'd never heard of it. So I got Paul Bingham, transportation economist with IHS Markit, on the line. He says the index shows how much it costs to transport dry freight on giant ships, say iron ore from Australia to China.
You rent the ship, if you will, and then you negotiate a price for that ship. And that price gets reported to this Baltic Exchange in London.
The folks in London compile costs for the tens of thousands of freight trips across thousands of sea routes, then spit out the composite index. Right now, it's high. The Delta variant has much to do with that, says Peter Sand, an analyst at the shipping association BIMCO.
It's driven most recently up by what we call congestion around China in particular, the COVID-19-related lockdowns.
Ships are having to linger in long lines around Chinese ports because there are not enough port workers to move them in and out. That means less shipping traffic overall and higher costs to get materials on a boat where they need to go. Sand says the Baltic Dry Index specifically tracks cargo commodities.
It's iron ore for steel production. It's coal, grains, soy bauxite, scrap steel, nickel ore. Well, you name it, we got it.
U.S. industries that rely on things like steel are having to pay those higher shipping costs, says Anibhan Basu, chief economist for Associated Builders and Contractors.
Has really significantly driven up the cost of delivering construction services.
How long will higher shipping costs stick around? That depends, like so much else right now, on the Delta variant. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
While we wait for Jay Powell's big speech on Friday, which honestly can only disappoint now, given how much it's been hyped. But anyway, while we wait, here is today's third economic indicator, inflation. Krispy Kreme says effective next week, its incentive for people to get vaccinated is going to double from one free donut to two if you show your vaccination card. Inflation doesn't just mean prices, you know, people. On Wall Street today, more record highs. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Big meeting today at the White House in between the ones on Afghanistan and the economy that one can only assume were happening was cybersecurity, a summit of sorts with private sector CEOs in tech and finance and energy, a call to action, the White House said, for those CEOs and their companies to shore up infrastructure and services cyber defenses. The hacking news you are surely aware of, everything from meat processors to pipelines, and the Biden administration wants help from the private sector, including hiring more cybersecurity workers. The Commerce Department figures there are about 500,000 open cybersecurity jobs across this economy. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on the cyber workforce gap.
The need for cybersecurity skills is only going to grow, but the U.S. is already lagging behind, says James Lewis at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
We haven't mentally adjusted to the fact that everything we do is now pretty much done on the internet. Your car, your work, your refrigerator.
Right now, the majority of cybersecurity jobs require a 4-year degree in computer science. And that's a problem, says Amberine Siraj, a professor at Tennessee Tech University.
The pipeline problem in cyber roots back to the pipeline problem in computer science, because computer science is still not widely accessible to students in K-12.
To meet the scale of the demand for cybersecurity skills, we need to be considering creative alternatives to the classic college pathway into the profession, says Todd Thibodeau with the Computing Technology Industry Association.
The idea is that we can have people come through community college programs, through for-profit university programs, through online university programs, which accelerate this process.
His organization offers certification programs that can be completed in a matter of months. And tech companies are also leaning into the problem. Dell Technologies works with high schools to offer hands-on education in computer science and cybersecurity, says Senior VP and Chief Security Officer John Simone.
Just a few weeks ago, I was engaging with high school students, trying to break some of the misperceptions around, the industry is only for highly technical people, or the industry is hard to break into, demystifying it.
And it's the perfect time to recruit mid-career professionals, too. Many have quit their jobs and are looking for a change because of the pandemic. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
A couple of weeks ago, in a parking lot about a mile south of Marketplace World headquarters here in downtown Los Angeles, I met up with a guy who has just started up a business.
I'm Kai. Nice to see you.
Pleasure.
How are you?
Doing well.
Carlton Fraser is 34 years old. He's the co-founder, the CEO, and one of two full-time employees at the Manifest Company.
My company creates custom health and yoga mats to help people find their space.
Tell me how you came to be in the yoga mat business.
Well, I'm a yoga teacher, one.
That's a good start.
Carlton's been teaching yoga for about 5 years now, and not too long ago quit his day job, which was marketing, to launch this company.
During my personal journey, I realized how important yoga and meditation was for me. And so the best way to get people into yoga and meditation was to create a cool mat.
Which is all great, right? People finding their space, especially now, right? We all know how just terrible it is right now. Sadly, you got to run a business.
Correct.
Tell me that part of this story.
Well, I can create the mat, I can design it, but getting it to the end user, that's really the problem.
And that problem is why we are in this parking lot.
We're at my fulfillment center, downtown Los Angeles.
And we should say this is a what? It's a 12, 15-story warehousey looking place?
Yeah, it's a 15-story warehouse. They house our finished products and our raw products, right? So our products that need to be designed and our products that are ready to be fulfilled and shipped.
Absolutely no offense intended. You're a tiny little business.
Yes.
I can't imagine you need 15 floors worth of warehouse space. So how does this
not
work?
Yet. not yet. We're manifesting
good for you. You and Elon Musk. Anyway, go ahead.
But because we're a small business, we were looking for something that's a la carte. I don't need a 50,000 space warehouse where I'm only using maybe 40 square feet.
Are you serious? 40 square feet? I mean, that's what you need to store them rolled up and everything?
A little bit more than that. But,
all right, okay. All right, well, look.
But not 5,000 square feet just yet.
Okay. All right, good. How's your stress level running a small business?
As a CEO, it's pretty high, but I know the tools and tactics of meditation, yoga, journaling to bring it down. So
fair enough.
It's great. We should try it.
I was in yoga for a while. Let's go inside. All right, so this is definitely not a warehouse. Look at this. This is like some kind of space thing.
Yes.
All right. Doesn't look like a warehouse inside because it's not. It's kind of a multi-purpose building with sales floors and event spaces, a coffee shop, and shared workspaces for companies to rent. And then up on the second floor. Floor two. Here we go. All right, so this looks vaguely more warehousey. Oh, yeah, there we go. All right. Rows and rows of boxes as far as the eye can see. Oh, look at that. They're the yoga mats.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, I was not far from wrong, 40 square feet. I wasn't, you know.
No, not right. We just started.
Carlton pays $265 a month for the space and the software that helps him track what's in it. Also, a per-unit fee based on how much inventory he is moving out. So tell me again how it works.
How it works.
You realize you needed space, and then what did you do?
I Googled. Right, I Google fulfillment centers, but then that's when I discovered Flow Space.
And that's where you come in.
Exactly. Hi, my name is Ben. I'm co-founder and CEO of Flow Space.
Ben Ekus's company, Flow Space, is the one collecting those fees. It's what's known as an on-demand warehouse provider, kind of like an Airbnb, actually, but for logistics. Doesn't own any warehouses itself, but is one of a couple of companies disrupting this industry so that retailers and e-commerce companies like Carlton's can get small or even temporary warehouse spaces.
You know, as Carlton mentioned, he's just starting out. For him to find a partner that's willing to take a chance on what today is a small business, but in 5 years is going to be a massive business, is really difficult. I think ultimately our goal is to democratize logistics and help these businesses actually meet the increased expectations of their customers.
There was a lot in that sentence you just said. Democratize, right, this business, but also customers' increased expectations. Because I'll tell you what, I order a yoga mat, I want it like yesterday afternoon, you know? Right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I think, frankly, with the advent of Shopify and other platforms, it's never been easier to start an online store. But it's actually never been harder to get your products to an end customer faster.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what FlowSpace is doing is working with brands like Carlton's, aggregating them, and then essentially working with warehouse operators around the country to help people pay transactionally and offer fast delivery for their customers.
It's a little bit of creative destruction here, right? I mean, you're taking the warehouse industry, right, which most of us probably think of as Amazon and ginormous and 11 bazillion square feet, and breaking it into, okay, what is this, like a 20 by 20 space, right? I mean, it's probably 400 square feet, right? I mean, that's what you're doing.
Exactly, and the beauty of it is when the Manifest company, they're just starting out right now, but when they scale up, they'll still be able to pay transactionally, take on more space, and they'll be able to offer an Amazon-like experience without having to go through Amazon.
So this is one of those things where it was happening before the pandemic, and the pandemic just turbocharged it, right? I mean, that's the deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would anybody be offended if I called this bare bones? Whole lot of shaking heads here. Because, Carlton, you don't care, right? I mean, it's a couple of, this is glorified, but it's a couple of card tables and some cardboard boxes, and that's all you needed.
Yeah, it's not in my apartment, right? I don't have all these boxes, and it's COVID, too, so you don't want to fulfill all of this in your house. So where can I find that safe that I can still access and then make sure that it's sent out on time and it's trackable?
So in 5 years, what does your yoga mat company look like?
5 years, we'll probably be selling a million mats per year.
A lot of mats, man.
Yeah. What?
How much am I paying for one of your mats, by the way?
Currently $95. But
wow.
We'll be having different styles. We'll have circle mats. We're coming out with extra long mats for basketball players, for those who are 6'5" and taller.
And you're going to sell a million of them in 5 years?
Yeah. For sure.
Okay.
For sure.
Got to have that confidence to be an entrepreneur, right? Ben Ekus at Flowspace there, also Carlton Fraser, trying to manifest his future at the Manifest Company. Coming up.
I have sold them at my school.
Every place can be a business opportunity, you know. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 39 today, about a 10%, close to 35,405. The NASDAQ gained 22 points, a 10%, 15,041. S&P 500 up 9 points, 0.2%, 44.96. Chip makers were generally higher today. NVIDIA added 1.9%. The Department of Energy announced its supercomputer is going to use that firm's computing platform. Intel was flat. This week, the company said it's going to be part of a Defense Department program to bolster advanced chip production in the United States. We heard earlier about high costs for ships used to send items around the world. Let's see how some shipping and logistics companies fared today. Remember the Baltic Drive we told you about? Old Dominion Freight Line climbed to 10% today. Trucker XPO Logistics drove up 1%. UPS, though, dropped 0.2%. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note up to 1.34%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. There is kind of a complicated dance going on in the energy markets right now. We are using more power this year as we open up from the worst of the pandemic this past winter. The price of natural gas is up. We've told you about that. Andy Euler has, anyway. And as a result, the government estimates we are going to use more coal, not the cleanest of fuels, of course, this year than we have been recently. Interesting renewables footnote to this, though. The United States installed more wind energy capacity last year than it has ever, and President Biden has set a goal for power generation in this economy to be carbon-free by 2035, as part of which he wants wind industry equipment manufacturing to happen here. So, Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has this wind primer.
Back in 2019, wind energy became the most used source of renewable energy in the United States. It helped the U.S. consume more renewable energy than coal energy for the first time in more than 130 years since we switched away from wood fire.
Wind has been a tremendous success story, especially in recent years.
Abby Watson is head of government affairs for Siemens Gamesa, a wind turbine manufacturer. Demand for wind energy created demand for wind energy equipment, and there is now a manufacturing base in the U.S.
We have an assembly facility in Hutchinson, Kansas, as well as a blade manufacturing facility in Fort Madison, Iowa.
2020 in particular was such a crazy year for wind installation, partly because it had been in the making for a while. For 5 straight years, the federal government had been offering a tax credit to producers of wind power. J.C. Sandberg is chief advocacy officer at the American Clean Power Association, an industry group representing renewable energy companies.
Last year was what happens in a market when there is policy and market certainty.
But ironically, it's also what happens when that certainty runs out. Spending on subsidies has been controversial, and that federal incentive was set to end at the end of last year.
So you had this big rush to get your wind power plant online so that it could get this incentive.
Claudia Hittai is with the Luxembourg Institute for Science and Technology. That tax credit was in the end renewed for another year, but at a lower level. Hittai says this cycle of on-again, off-again incentives, specifically tax credits, has been going on for decades.
It started in 1992, and then it expired for the first time in 1999. And since then, it's expired a total of 13 times.
Each time, she says, you never really knew if it would be extended.
And so whenever this expiration year rolled around, you had this big rush.
On the one hand, these on-again, off-again government motivators have been good enough to the point that the U.S. has the third highest per capita wind power generation in the world. On the other hand, we are a distant third behind Denmark and Germany, and manufacturing in the U.S. has in some ways been held back. Again, Siemens Gamesa's Abby Watson.
That cyclicality is something that has been extremely challenging for the industry, especially for a manufacturer. Manufacturing facilities are not designed to ramp up and ramp down in an efficient fashion.
The instability of government support has prevented some types of manufacturing from taking root in the U.S., says Dan Ancona, vice president for renewable energy at consulting firm Princeton Energy Resources International.
One of the problems is a lot of the high-value stuff, you know, the big gearboxes and some of the electronics and the generators, much of that is being imported.
Even though, he says, it doesn't have to be. There's legislation in Congress now designed to hold tax credits for production and manufacturing in place for at least 7 more years.
Our political winds here is kind of our nemesis. It blows hot and cold, depending on particular views.
So the fortunes of an industry based on wind are driven by something much more fickle than the breeze, and that would be Congress. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Not only do we have podcasts around here, we got newsletters as well, including one for the podcast that Molly Wood and I do together. It's called Make Me Smart. On it this week, the death of the hard seltzer industry. You can sign up at marketplace.org/newsletters. Some, most, maybe, kids might dread the start of a new school year, but others are looking forward to seeing friends again, and some entrepreneurially minded young students see the new school year as a business opportunity.
I'm Layla, and I'm 13 years old. I have a jewelry business, and I make all sorts of jewelry. I make bracelets, I make earrings, I make necklaces. I have sold them at my school. And to neighbors and really anyone. Earrings can range from $2 to $10, and necklaces about $10. The money I make goes to Holiday Helper, which helps soldiers to afford Christmas presents and stuff for their family around Christmas time. I think it's really important that everyone is able to afford a Christmas tree and presents for their kids, and that everyone's happy around Christmas time. The first year that I did it, I made about $70. The second year, I made about $100, and it just kind of progressed from there. The last year that I did it, I made $200. I did help to inspire my sister to start her own business.
My name is Kaya, and I am 8 years old. When I found out that she started doing it, I wanted to help. So I started making a little bit of jewelry, but then I realized that I love making stories, so I started selling them. I would just say, whatever you like to do, you can start making it for your own business.
My advice would be to first pick a passion that you have and keep making or doing whatever that is, and maybe do it for a good cause.
Layla and Kaya's story comes to us from Million Bazillion. That's our podcast answering the questions that kids have about money. Seasons 1 and 2 are out now on podcast apps everywhere. Final note on the way out today, the CEO of Delta Airlines, Ed Bastian, said in a memo to employees today, all 68,000 of them, that they are going to have to get vaccinated or deal with weekly testing and, oh, by the way, pay an extra $200 a month to be on the company's health plan. Bastian said the average hospital stay for a COVID patient costs Delta, which is self-insured, $50,000. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context. One more vaccine item, this time from Jim Farley. He's the CEO of Ford. He was talking to CNN, and he said the company's mask mandate in its factories has resulted in as many as 20% of its workers just not showing up. Our media production team, all of whom show up, is Brian Allison, Drew Johnstadt, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Liana Squillace, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.